My guest today on Family Bible Hour is Larry Price. Larry was born and raised in Florida and still lives there near Orlando. His story is a vivid reminder of God's grace. And Larry, as we begin today, how about giving us some of your early background to put what you're going to tell us in context?
I was raised in a family that was what we'd call a traditional family. Father worked, and then later on my mother worked as well. I was an only child for 14 years, so I'm sure that that had some effect in my life. My family was not a particularly religious family in any sense of the term, so I wasn't really raised in what you'd call a Christian home. I was sent to Sunday school, rarely taken, when I was a little boy. But that didn't last very long after I got old enough to kind of do more what I wanted to do.
So once you started making up your own mind about what you would do on Sundays, Sunday school was not a high priority.
No, it wasn't a priority at all.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 14, my parents had a child, my brother, and he's the only other relative in my family. I don't have any other sisters or brothers. But I guess by that time, too, my life was already headed in another direction, so I don't know that had a big impact at that point.
Yeah. Tell me about that other direction that your life was headed in.
About the time I was a teenager, which would have been in the late 60s, as many people are aware, the period of time that we were living in, especially in the States, and I'm sure in other parts of the world as well, was a very turbulent time, and a lot of young people were going in a lot of different directions. And unfortunately, I chose to go in a direction that was not a good direction and led me down a pretty bad path. So by the time I was 15 or 16 in the late 60s, I was pretty much getting involved with a lot of things that were that a lot of young people were getting involved with in that day. Not all, but a lot of them. It was a time in our country especially when there was seemed to be a spirit of rebellion against authority and seemed to be a sense of just trying whatever came along the path or down the pike, and I sort of began to get involved in that, even though as a young person, my parents raised me with certain moral principles, and I had always said that I would never get involved in certain things in life, but found that not to be true when those opportunities presented themselves.
So even though you had some personal resolve to live a moral life, when the opportunities came along and presented themselves, you found yourself almost involuntarily.
That's right. And I'm not sure I'd use the word involuntarily, but I found myself with really, at first, doing things that I wanted to do, but then doing things not so much because I wanted to do them, but because I felt I couldn't do anything else. In other words, I really didn't have the ability not to do them anymore or the resistance not to do them.
So there were some steps involved in this decline, shall we say, for going from doing things you were making conscious decision to do to being almost trapped by your earlier decisions and making decisions again, but they was out of control.
Exactly. And at that time when I was in the junior high school grades as we had them, 8th and 9th grade especially, I remember, I was very much influenced by the crowd that I was around. I always wanted to be very popular, and I wanted to hang around with who I considered to be the most popular in school. The most popular in the school that I was in, at least the ones that I saw as the most popular, were not necessarily the best characters around. Although many of them did not get involved in the same things I did and didn't go down the same path that I did, at least I was very much influenced by that. Whatever the crowd was doing, I wanted to be a part of it, and I wanted to be at the forefront of it.
So you found your significance, your personal significance, in popularity with your peers.
That's right. And because of that, there were a lot of things being offered around at that time, and I began to pursue those type of things. I seemed to identify with the more rebellious people that were part of the group that I was in. Even if there would have been quite a number in the group, the more rebellious of that group, I would have identified myself with them.
This happened in early high school then. Where did that lead you?
About the time I was 13, I started doing various things in school, such as leaving school, skipping school, and hanging around with some of the friends who were doing the same type of thing. That led me to my first experiences with involvement with drugs at about the age of 13. And I can remember, again, you mentioned the moral resolve. There were certain things that I said that I would never do. In other words, you might experiment with this one particular drug, but I'll never do whatever the next one might be. And yet there seems to be a progression where when you break one barrier, the next one becomes a little bit easier to break. So by the time that I was 15, there were probably not any drugs that I hadn't done and not any way that I hadn't done them.
You were really putting your life at risk.
I really was, and yet it all seemed like a big party. It all seemed like a big game. I saw no other reason to live at that point other than to have a good time, to party, to hang out with my friends, and to not have any restrictions of whatsoever kind laid upon me.
I guess what boggles me a little bit, this is all happening up to the point you're 16. Many of us who are in the over 40 category would still see a 16-year-old as a child, and I apologize to the teenagers who might be listening, but that's very young to have arrived at that sort of ultimate goal of your life. I mean, there you were, you'd arrived to just have fun, and you were there.
Yeah.
But you've obviously made it way past 16.
Yeah.
This road you were on kept taking you somewhere. Where was that?
Yeah, it did. As a matter of fact, as you mentioned that, I have my children who are teenagers now, three of them as a matter of fact, and so I look at them oftentimes and I shake my head and wonder that at their age I was doing things that I wouldn't even mention to them. That road led me to worse and worse conflict in a lot of areas. There were obviously at that time many conflicts within the home. I grew to disdain any authority within the home whatsoever, or any authority of any kind. Because of the type of life I was living at that time, it created problems in school. I was at school less and less. I spent more and more time in juvenile detention center at that time because of, at that time, truancy was something they put you in juvenile detention center for, at least until your parents would come and pick you up, which they always did. So I began to run into conflicts with the authorities as well. And my life began to take that direction, with problems with crime and problems with drugs and all of the things that are associated with that.
Were most of your problems with the law related to drugs directly or indirectly?
In one form or another, they would relate to that, either because we wanted to get money to have drugs, or we wanted to get money to have a party, or because we just didn't want to work and provide money for whatever we wanted to do. So many of the crimes that we would be involved in were drug-related in one form or another.
And you were still living at home during all this time?
Off and on. I lived at home when I wanted to live at home. And I know that sounds like a kind of a brash statement, but basically that's the way it was. And I really put my parents through a lot of turmoil. I can remember one time, and I even shudder to think of it now, having children my own that are teenagers. For instance, one afternoon I went out to play when I was probably 15, and I didn't come home for 3 months, and never notified my parents, never told them where I was at. I used to do a lot of hitchhiking. I hitchhiked to Atlanta, Georgia at that time, which is several hundred miles from where my home in Jacksonville is, and lived off the street for 3 months until I was arrested in Atlanta, Georgia as a teenager, and my parents again came to pick me up.
I see a lot of steps downward here. Where did you eventually hit bottom?
Well, I eventually hit bottom several years later in my early 20s. Well, I should back up just to say there were several bottoms.
bounced along the bottom.
Yeah, I just bounced along the bottom, and the bottom got a little bit deeper. I hit bottom several times in my life. The experiences with the law got worse and worse because one thing leads to another. My time involved in activity that brought me up in contact with the wrong side of the law, those type of contacts grew worse and worse. I want to say that I hit bottom several times because I want to emphasize the fact that during this period, there were times when I really had a struggle within me. I would get in trouble, perhaps end up in jail, and I would really, in there, say to myself, at times, it was a sort of a Jekyll and Hyde almost, because there was a time when I said, I really wish I could break this lifestyle. I really don't want to live like this. But then once I got back out on the street again, I found myself right back into the same crowd, same lifestyle, and same thing. So there were several bottoms in that sense. But the real bottom came in 1978. And I'd need to back up just a little bit to give you a little background of what had happened at that time. I found myself as a young man in my 20s, actually in prison, in the state penitentiary, in the state of Georgia. I'd already been in the state penitentiary in the state of Florida as a young man and served a sentence there. And then I was arrested in the state of Georgia. And while in prison, a pretty dramatic thing happened to me there, because I began to think that I knew the answer to my problems. I got involved in some college-related courses in the prison at that time that they offered. And up until that point, prior to 1977, if you would have asked me about religion, if you would have asked me about Christianity or any of those things, I would have argued in favor of those things. If you would have told me the Bible was not true, I would have argued with you that it was true. And so that's a sort of a strange contradiction, but I guess it had to do somewhat with my upbringing. But in 1977, as I began to take these college courses, one of the courses I took was a world history course, and it was taught by a religious lady who told us at that time that she didn't really believe that the Bible was true when it gave the account of how the world began and such as that. I began to develop the idea at that time that all religions were basically the same. They were just sort of man's search for God, and they all sort of ended up in the same place. They just had different names for God. And I began for the first time to deny that there was any difference in the Bible or that it could do anything for you. I began to view religion then as more of a crutch. I felt very strongly then that I wanted to find the answer to what made man tick. And so I thought, well, if I can learn what makes the mind tick, then I'll understand what man is all about. I'll be able to solve my problems. So I thought the best way to do that was to pursue a course in psychology. And I felt that if I could get a degree in psychology, then I'd understand man. Well, I was released in early 1978 on what's called an educational release. It's kind of a unique thing. But they released me to go to college. Now, I was still only in the first year or so of college at that point. And I had only been out for about 75 days when I found myself arrested on a drug-related charge and on my way to prison for the third time. It was then that I really hit bottom. And I found myself in a little town in the state of Georgia, and they put me in the jail cell. And I can remember at that time that I felt as if, the best I can describe it, is the rug was pulled out from under me. I felt like all the props were gone. And at that time, in my early 20s, I thought that the only solution that I could see to anything, and it really wasn't a solution, but I really was in such a state of despair that I thought about ending my own life. Because to me, if there wasn't anything else, and if life just consisted of one problem to the next, and from one high to the next, or one drunk to the next, or one jail cell to the next, and I had to go back to prison again, then life just wasn't worth living. And so that's really when I hit bottom. And I had never considered those kind of thoughts before. I'd always felt that there had to be a way out. I could make a way out. But I really hit the bottom at that time.
So you experienced despair for the first time in your life, really?
I won't say it was the first time, but I experienced despair in a way that I had never experienced before. I had been in pretty hopeless situations before. Prison can be a very hopeless type of place where you experience despair that's almost indescribable. And yet, at that point and stage in my life, I experienced a state of despair that brought me to the brink of considering taking my life.
Well, obviously you didn't. So something happened. What happened, Larry?
Well, what happened was the Lord intervened. I was arrested in a little town in Georgia that I had only heard of once before. And if I could just back up for just a minute again and relate one other thing, the experience in prison prior to my release at this last time was such that I was not only involved in college-level programs, but I was placed in a unique rehabilitation program within the prison. They took about 60 inmates that were all drug-related charges, and they put us all in a cell block together, and they ran a drug rehab program in-house. There were two what we call free world men, that is men that were not from the prison, who worked in the program as counselors. I had talked my way up to a position that was right under those two men. There was me and one other man that were the head over all these prisoners as far as this drug rehab program was concerned. Part of the problem was is that even while we were involved in this drug rehab program, I was still doing drugs within the prison. So at the same time I was telling people that we ought not to be doing drugs and how to get off them, I was still involved in drugs myself, drug abuse. And I relate that to say that the futility of man's efforts to be able to really do anything about the problem of man. At that time I was interviewed, I wasn't just interviewed, but they interviewed the prison concerning this drug rehab program, and I guess because I like to talk a lot, they quoted a number of things that I said. One of the things they ended the article with was a statement that I made at the time, prison can never rehabilitate you, you have to rehabilitate yourself. And that was what I believed at that time. Well, when I was arrested in this little town, I didn't know anybody from the town except for one person. It was one of the counselors in this drug rehab program who was from this town. And since they gave you a phone call, I said I might as well use mine. So I called up to his house, but he wasn't there. However, his parents were there. And his parents happened to be members at a Bible-believing church in this town. And they came out to visit me. Now, they didn't know me, had never met me before. They brought me a Bible, and they talked to me. And it just seemed like two things. One, what they were saying to me seemed to hit home, and the sincerity of them coming out to see me in that situation when they didn't know me from anybody seemed to speak to me. Then they sent out the preacher from the church that they were at, who happened to be, I thought oddly enough at the time, from the town that I was born and raised in. He had been a preacher there for many years, and he came to talk to me. And once again, it seemed like everything that he had to say was directly pointed at me. Now, at this time, I'm starting to think these are interesting coincidences, you know, that these people would come to see me and that they would send this man to see me. And there was a man that at that time who had a Bible study in the jail that I was in. And so I went to the Bible study, and I remember he was speaking from John chapter 2 about the wedding in Cana. It didn't really seem to have anything to do with my situation at the time, but everything that he said really seemed pointed directly at me. And I believe now that it was the Lord using his word and using the witness of these people to bring the gospel to me at that time.
So you're in a little jail in Georgia. You're starting to sense that, or at least God is at work in your life, whether you sense it or not. You know that something is different now.
That's right.
Take me on.
Well, I went back to my cell. I was by myself at that time, and everything that had been said to me began to speak to me. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I was sent to Sunday school as a child. I had heard the gospel many times as a child. Matter of fact, up until prior to 1977, if you would have asked me, I probably would have said that I was a Christian, just because I knew all the facts of what the gospel was about. But at that time, and to me, I look back on it, and I think in that little cell, I prayed probably one of the most untheological prayers that you could think about, but I just cried out to God, and I said, God, help me. And I really believe at that moment it wasn't so much the words of my lips that he heard, but he heard the cry of my heart. And over the next couple of days, because this particular jail was rather unique in that the sheriff who was there had a real openness towards people coming in with the gospel, and there were a lot of people that were coming. It was a very small jail. Although it was maximum security, there were probably only 30, 35 people in the jail, and yet there were numbers of people that were allowed to come in with Bible studies and literature and this type of thing. So I got hold of some gospel tracts, and I read those gospel tracts. And one of the tracts would say, you know, if you want to be saved, do these four things, believe, confess, receive, whatever they might have been. So I, the best I could, did those four things. And then another one would say, if you want to be saved, do these six things, you know, believe, confess, repent, whatever they might have been. And I wanted to make sure I'd done it right, so I did those things. But at that time, I really was reading these gospel tracts and this little New Testament that was brought to me, and I began to sense that something had occurred in my life. I began to read this little New Testament, and for the first time, I began to understand it. And I know that it might sound like an old expression that we hear often in religious circles, but it was like a light had come on. And I could see now some of the, not only was I reading, but I was understanding. And I began to read this little New Testament. Well, I read it through the first time, and as I was reading it through the second time, having just come out of a college experience, I said, you know, I ought to be highlighting some of these things and underlining them. So I started underlining some of the things that I found in this little New Testament. And then I thought, well, you know, I didn't really get the first half of it because I was on my way through the second time, so I better go back and read again and start underlining. Well, in 2 weeks, I read that little New Testament through three times, and when I went back and looked at it, almost every verse had been underlined because I was trying to underline the significant parts. And it was just like God's Word was really speaking to me. And I remember at that time, the thought came to me, if I wanted to tell somebody else how to get saved, where could I find that in the Bible? And I remembered that the very first time, as a young man, 18 years of age, I'd gone to state prison in the state of Florida, a dear lady had written me a letter, and she'd written at the bottom of the letter, Romans 10:13, whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. And just like a flash, all those years later, that verse came to me.
You remembered that?
I remembered that verse that she had written on the bottom of a letter that I hadn't seen for years. And I turned to look the verse up there in the Bible, whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. And not only did I believe that at that time, but I believed that I could use that to show someone else, if I needed to, how they could be saved. So it was there in that little jail cell that I trusted Christ as my Savior. And I began to notice that He began to take away from me, even in that place where many things were still accessible, the desires for some of the things that I had desired before.
So you had some time still facing you in that prison, did you?
I did. I did have some time still facing me, and still had to go and face trial. I should have been looking at a much longer sentence than what I received, but the way that things worked out, I actually received a much shorter sentence than what I should have received. And at the